You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
There's no main questions that pop to mind. The only main question is, I noticed you have an accent. I'm curious where you are from.
I'm from Pawtucket, Rhode Island, just outside of
Okay.
Providence.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. So actually birthplace of the Industrial Revolution, first mill that was put on the river and used the moving water for energy for the mill, and basically the whole textile industries of the Northeast kind of just built off of that. And
awesome.
So old industrial city, and actually used to have the company Hasbro, the toy manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Yeah.
There's just corporate offices there, but
sure.
Yeah. So all right, so let's get into it. First big question is, what were you like as a young child? What type of things were you interested in?
So as a young child, my main passions actually lied in sports. I was very much into the three major ones: football, baseball, and basketball. When I was young. And I played some little league here and there. And aside from sports, hanging out with the neighborhood kids, we had a pretty large VHS collection in my house. So, like I said, I was kind of raised in front of a TV with movies specifically. And it just kind of took my imagination. And I didn't quite dive into wanting to make films until a little later. But as a child, going out into the woods with the friends and pretending we're Rambo or, whatever, reciting lines from movies that we probably shouldn't have watched at the age that we watched them. Not many 10-year-olds probably watch Die Hard when they're homesick from school, but,
maybe more should the message.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Yes. That kind of shaped my personality. My friends kind of regarded me as comedic at times. And, I grew up with, an older sister. She's 2 years older than me. And, we kind of hung out here and there, but it was mostly just me with the neighborhood kids. Grew up in a small town, Philomath, Oregon, about 4,000 people. It's growing a little bit now, but yeah, I was fairly outgoing and, had a good upbringing. Mom and dad, high school sweethearts. So they raised us well. And yeah, I had a good childhood.
it's really, really great. Really great to hear. So the role of film, I can share a couple things with you. Mm-hmm. that I share similarly. My dad is a huge film buff and
sure.
Watched tons and tons and tons of films. And it was really funny because prior to, being able to look things up on Google on your phone, I'd call him in. I'd be like, Dad, who the heck is, who's this actor? And really
right.
obscure film, obscure actor. And he'd say who it is. And then he'd cross-reference about five or six films that he was in.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, I grew up around that encyclopedic knowledge and know, like, how film can be just really important, something to have around as a, I think a lot of times as a bit of escape. So,
mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you do is as well as your manager of a independent cinema, Dark Side Cinema, in Corvallis. But you also do music, and I know some of the themes with your music. Kind of hover around, on themes of film,
sure.
And kind of like a movie soundscape, I guess I would say.
Absolutely.
But,
Yeah.
And so I'm you know, I see those things kind of moving back and forth between each other, but tell us about your process of creating music, and where it comes from, because from some of your descriptions, it sounds like you're kind of capturing things, or you're capturing sounds and are letting things arise. Is that the case? Is that how you go about it?
That's kind of the case now. It didn't start out that way. I didn't get into music until after high school. I graduated in 2005, and it was around that time that I'll backtrack a little bit. I had a good friend who took drum lessons, and I would go sit in on his drum lessons, and I've always gravitated towards rhythm when I listen to music. Lyrics kind of fall by the wayside, but I'm always listening to the drums. And so there was no musical talent in my family, so I didn't think I had it in me. But then when I graduated high school, my friend had a drum kit, and it was in his garage, and he was very musical at the time, and he still is. And we just kind of sat down, and I started to play, and it sounded terrible, obviously, because, as you know, there's a few musical savants out there that can just play a tune immediately, but most of us, you know, it sounds like hot garbage for a little while. So I started playing the drums, and then I joined a couple bands, and I was playing their music. I wasn't doing anything of my own at the time, and until about 4 years ago, I started to kind of branch off from those bands, and I started exploring different sounds that I admired or that I was curious about, and then I started to kind of play around. Specifically within the drum set, I started to play around with creating different ways to play it that I found interesting. I started to follow a lot of freeform avant-garde jazz musicians, and the way that they approach music was very fascinating to me, just kind of on the fly, in a way, just in the moment. Whatever you're feeling at the time, you play that, and you just kind of let it go and go with it. So I started to do that with the drums specifically, and it wasn't until a couple years ago I started to get into synthesizers, and I've been exploring that those possibilities, which are endless. It's just enormous, all the things that you can create within a synthesizer. And I've been pairing the two, drums and synthesizers. But yeah, mostly the process for me is I just, you know, if I have a feeling, I'll play to that feeling and see where it takes me.
I really like that description, and I like how you described that at the end. That really brought it in for me, and I heard some of that in your songs. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Joey Bauer on Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and what we're gonna do, Joey, is play a track of 12 Ribs, and I'm gonna play it, and it's off Telepornographic Hypnosis Conspiracy, and it's by your alter ego, The Obvious. That would be correct.
Yes, The Obvious, absolutely.
All righty. There we go. We're going to play 12 Ribs. I really like that track, Joey.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. That album actually is if we want to talk about that for a little bit, that was a fun album to do.
Tell us about that. Why was it a fun album?
Well, the approach to it was different, and I had a couple of my friends help me with just a few songs. I had my friend Charlie, who I was in a band with. He did some bass for a couple tracks, and my other friend Kellen, who I am currently doing music with, he did a few things as well. But for that album, what I did is I went into the recording studio. Because the band that I was in at the time, we have a practice space that also doubles as a recording studio. And so we had my drums mic'd up 24/7. So I could just go in whenever I wanted to and turn on the computer and record. And so what I did is I just played all the tracks. That is the first thing that came to my mind. I didn't have a plan. I would just go in, push record, and then start playing the drums. And then from there, I would take what I did and then I would listen to it a couple times and then build on that and see what I wanted to layer over it. So with that track in particular, I had this idea after I did the drums of just kind of like a weird jazz piece. And I'm not trained in keyboards either, but I just kind of did whatever with that. So yeah, recorded the drums first and then just layered things on top of it. And going back to film with that track, there's a piano bit where it kind of goes dun dun dun. One of my musical heroes is Ennio Morricone, and he did the score for the film The Untouchables, and their theme song for that, it has this kind of driving this driving sound, and then it has this specific like dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. So I was trying to emulate certain things from that film in that track as well, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when I was listening to the track itself, the one thing that it's come up to my mind twice, last couple times I've listened to it, is that it seems to me like it holds together, and I want to keep listening to this conversation, but it's almost like three people trying to each get attention and talk at a party. Like there's these voices. Yeah. It's like, listen to me. And I know there's the piano barging in, but it's like, listen to me. And I keep hearing that throughout the track. And I thought it was so entertaining in that way. And feeling kind of like a movie scene a little bit too. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. No, that was a fun album to do. I did that in the summertime, 2017, I believe. And then from there, it just progressed. I opened the barge with that album.
Yeah. So talking about that, I mean, you're busy. You got a young family. There's a lot of different things to do. And then there's this part of you that, you know, you want to create. So, you know, what compels you to create something? What drives you to you know, take your time and create, you know, a music and images?
I think it stems from once I discovered I had musical capability, it started to grow inside me that there were feelings and emotions that I wanted to get out. And a way for me to do that was through music. At first, I wanted to be a filmmaker, and I found that was quite time-consuming and expensive. Being a musician is also time-consuming and expensive, but you can do things on your own. Whereas with a film, you have to assemble a crew, and you know, there's schedules. But with music, I mean, I could be home by myself and plug in a keyboard and just kind of let loose, or play the bongos. I wanted to create because of things inside me that I wanted to release, in a specific way. And that was through music.
Do you feel those things where you could only express through music?
Absolutely. I also like to write. And there's certain things I can express through my writing. But mostly, the greatest expression for me is musically.
That's really great. I talked on a previous show about my, you know, when I started painting, which was transformative as far as my approach and my exploration further into art. But for the really the first time, it was like a transition from trying to write or speak. And then I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing with this paint. I don't know what I'm doing with the canvas, but I'm doing something. And it's a different type of language. And it was like kind of just walking along and being like, okay, I need this language to get around. Which is why, of course, I asked the question about the music, because I have a connection to songs in that way. But I always love to delve into the mind of, you know, the music creator and how they you arrive at that point. And it sounds like the accessibility to creating really, really helps you. So now you're an artist. You're creating these songs and I believe they're, you know, works of art.
Sure.
But for you, when you're creating something, are you looking to create a work of art? And if so, what is it? What is art? What are you creating?
Sure. I would agree that I am trying to succeed in creating art. In Corvallis, there's a great community for artists. There's a fantastic noise scene where people just do harsh noise or ambient noise or whatever, and it's very expressive. But yeah, what I try to create is I want to put it out there for people, and I don't necessarily want a reaction from them, but I just want them to know that I put it out there for them, and they can do what they want with it. I've never really wanted to create anything to get something from it other than a release, an emotional release, or, you know, catharsis, whatnot. So, yeah.
So what about and that's really helpful to understand, you know, beginning with your process, but, you know, what you're looking to do with it is, you know, highly personal, but you're also, you know, putting that out there. And before we move on to film, could you just mention specifically about, you know, the names of your albums and Bandcamp, maybe your, you know, some of the stuff you have on the Bandcamp app and site?
Sure, yeah. So I think the first one, Telepornographic Hypnosis Conspiracy, I lifted that from a sci-fi book. It might have been Logan's Run. I can't remember specifically, but a lot of things stem from my admiration of sci-fi. I believe the second or third album on there, it's just seven dots. There's no name to it, but that one I created after my wife's grandpa had passed away. And there's a lot of emotions kind of bubbling up from that. And I wanted to create an album giving my respects to loved ones. And the album cover of that one I particularly enjoy because my son Henry, I think he was about 2.5 or 3 at the time, he cut up a bunch of pieces of paper and he assembled them on the floor in our bedroom. And it kind of, to me, it looked like someone running, a person running. And so I took a picture of that and used it as the album cover.
That's fantastic.
And in fact, on that album too, he played some keyboard. he just kind of like started messing around on it. And I added that in. I think it might've been the first minute and a half of the fourth track on that album. And then the other ones, they stem from me wanting to create music to, like I said, I wanted to be a filmmaker before. And so a lot of the music that I do, for my solo stuff comes from the music that I would put in a film that I'm creating in my own mind. very atmospheric soundscape kind of stuff. Yeah, so it all stems, you know, from cinema and just from wanting a release, a meditation in a way of emotions and stuff. So
yeah, and so you in within film, I mean, you work manage Dark Side Cinemas, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you specifically, what's the status? What's the vibe around the, you know, a smaller film house nowadays, and what you're able to bring in, and a lot of changes in the industry? Is it in enjoyable?
Sure, yeah.
Is there a lot of pressure? I mean, what's it like?
I would say there's a lot of pressure, and it's incredibly enjoyable. The community in Corvallis is they're very receptive to what we do and what we bring in. We have a couple multiplexes in town, and of course they're going to play the superhero films and those things. And every once in a while they'll get an indie film, but mostly that's for us, and it's catered to our demographic, which is a lot of the highest demographic for us is age range of 40 to 65. And we've transitioned into digital. We're not running 35 millimeter anymore like we used to. I think all that ended in about 2011 or 12. They stopped printing 35 millimeter prints, and everything now is on hard drives. And the little art houses we had to upgrade to survive. We had to pay some big dollars to get the new equipment in. And the community in Corvallis, they came out first, and they helped in a big way with some fundraisers. But it's we don't survive on ticket sales or concession sales. It's you know what my boss says. We're in it for the hearts and minds. We're winning the hearts and minds from the programming that we have. We do a lot of documentaries and foreign films, things that people don't see regularly, and then they can have a great conversation afterwards about what they just saw and seeing a different perspective of the world.
So it's a passion. It's a passion project.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the really the only job I've had. And I love it because, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of folks that come in all the time. And we're constantly evolving as well to try to stay relevant. So we've got certain programming that we do on Tuesdays where we do bad sci-fi films and people can heckle the screen, or we do an old film noir that that people really enjoy. And then one that's a common program for us is the last Tuesday of every month we have a silent film with live music. And the house band for that, their name is Sonic Chromatic, and it's just two guys, one on a organ or a baby grand piano, and then the other guy's doing percussion, and they do their own improvised score to an old silent film.
Oh, and my that's goodness. I got to go to draw. The next one. I don't know on my calendar. I got to go to the next one of those. That sounds great.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so, you know, we're doing that kind of stuff. We're holding film festivals. We partner with a film festival that does a queer film festival. Currently, we're doing a Jewish film festival. We've done other international film festivals. So, you know, we're getting people in that are curious about what the world has to offer in as far as cinema goes. So, it's a fun job.
Oh, and thanks for doing that. I mean, I've always tried to hunt down those places, and a lot of times out of necessity for the films that, you know, that I've wanted to see. And so what was the best film you've seen within the last, you know, say 6 months?
Oh, 6 months. Well, specifically at the Dark Side, I would say it wasn't 6 months ago. I'm cheating a little bit. It was,
that's fine.
I think last year, You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix, where he plays the veteran who rescues young girls from sex trafficking in New York, I believe. And it's directed by Lynn Ramsey. Yeah. Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's directed by Lynn Ramsey. She's done four films. That was her fourth film.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's a masterpiece. It's one of the films that, that I would like to make, that it fits that category for me. And every step of the way, it was just perfect. Not a missed note in the whole thing. In fact, once it was done, it's a heavy film, but once it was done, I wanted to watch it again just because I couldn't articulate how I felt about it quite yet. And
yeah, I know.
When a film hits me like that, it's like, oh boy, I got to sit on this one for a while, because that was something else. So I would say that one.
I know that feeling. That's a good tip on that one. And related to it, as far as how did the music interact with the film? Did you pick up a lot on that?
Yeah, so the score was done by Johnny Greenwood, who is a member of Radiohead, and he's been doing scores for Paul Thomas Anderson lately. In fact, his score for the film Phantom Thread is phenomenal, which is also a great film. It's not overwhelming, and it kind of goes subterranean in parts where you don't really notice it's there, but it holds everything together in the moment. It's non-intrusive. It just works really well with the film. And I think Johnny Greenwood, he does a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I known he had done some of that work, and you see some really amazing. I think I've seen some offshoots from, you know, bands that I've really enjoyed, and them going to film scores, and I find them just to be phenomenal, and just great terrain to go into. But even, you know, Nick Cave, and I think one of the collaborators with Portishead, I think it was maybe
Jeff Barrow. Yes. Yeah,
he does some incredible stuff. It heard in the work that you had done, it sounds like some creating that kind of world with sound.
Absolutely.
That was really cool to inhabit. And of course with Greenwood, right? So, I'd imagine yourself being into, you know, kind of the great music and or great bands to enjoy in those guys.
In fact, Jeff Barrow, he's in a group called Beak, and I recently saw them, I think it was 6 months ago or so. And they rarely come to the U.S. And when they were coming up to Portland, my friend Kellen and I, we had to go because that's a big inspiration for us. Portishead and Beak specifically. But yeah, he's great.
There's a few tangents I'm going to have to follow after the program here. Most definitely. So we got a couple more things. I mean, one of the things that we talked about in this is for me to kind of get into your head a bit and talk about, you know, the creative process and why you create things. And the show itself as a whole asked, you know, the question, why is there something rather than nothing? Applied to art a lot of times, but, you know, one of the things I heard in your songs in the music was kind of like this landscape where it seems that things were there and then things and sounds appeared out of that. So it really prompted that question in my head, you know, for you, and you can answer it with reference to the piece. But why is there something rather than nothing?
There has to be, in my mind, I think there has to be something, because if there isn't, then you fall into nothing. And when you fall into nothing, you become stagnant creatively or just in general. You have to put something out there. And a lot of times, something comes from nothing. You could be in a very dark place, or in the case of writer's block, you're stuck. There's nothing there, but then you find something wiggles its way in, and then you have something to grab onto, and so you start to make something from nothing. But I believe there always has to be something, because that is the driving force for specifically me creatively. I have to find something to move forward. Inspiration is something for me, and lots of things inspire me, specifically, you know, cinema that inspires me to create, music, and, interactions with my friends inspires me to create, my family, that they inspire me to create. And that's all something. So yeah, you have to have something, because like I said, if you don't have it, then things just become nothing. It's kind of like the Neverending Story. I think the biggest villain in that film is the nothing.
Aha! And I might have stumbled upon it.
Yeah, you don't want to go there. So.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's thank you so much. I mean, that was I really enjoyed your description. And, you know, on the podcast itself, we're going to continue to explore, you know, those processes, but also to sure. kind of keep interrogating that question. But I heard a lot of what you had to describe was about moving forward in life and, you know, casting forward energy and, you know, mining a bit, you know, psychologically down into where you think, you know, there's nothing but pulling something out. I want to thank you, Joey Bauer, for being on Something Rather Than Nothing. And
thank you.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and really appreciate, you know, the art that you're creating, and keep on doing it, because I think when a lot of people hear, you know, what you have to do within the sounds that you create, I think they're going to enjoy exploring those pieces of art you create. And just wanted to thank you again, Joey.
Well, thank you, Ken. I appreciate it.
Have a great evening.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing.